Good morning. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. Real Life is the radio show that's dedicated to women who are ready to love life and to make joy a part of the daily dialogue. So here we are again, ladies. It's Saturday morning, 8 o'clock. It's a chilly morning. I am having just a plain old cup of black tea, Lipton's black tea, and I'm really enjoying it this morning. And I'd like to invite you to join me in having your favorite yummy drink and find a quiet place where you can let the next 60 minutes be just about you. And, you know, for some reason, I'm moved this morning to just share with you this idea about when we struggle as women. I think we tend to isolate ourselves. And I really want to say that if there's something that you're struggling with right now, make sure that you reach out to a friend or a family member or some beloved who can help you through the hard time. Feminism has been a powerful movement in this country and others, helping millions of women to see the world in a totally different way and allowing them to reshape their personal stories of capability and success. But as is the case with virtually any ism, there are times when a set of beliefs and the events that shape our lives become less synchronous, forcing us to rethink our thinking. My guest this morning is a wonderful writer and one such woman, Elaine Gale. And Elaine is the Assistant Professor of Communication Studies and Journalism at California State University, Sacramento. Good morning, Elaine.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you for joining me this morning.
Sure, my pleasure.
Yeah. So, Elaine, I first found you through a blog that you had written entitled Breaking Up with Feminism. I love the title. And I'm hoping that for listeners who have not yet read it, you could give us a quick synopsis.
Well, Breaking Up with Feminism is a piece that I wrote actually last May, and I kind of sat on it for a while and then just got it published in the Star Tribune in December. So the piece is about my struggle between my relationship with feminism and my relationship with the feminine. And actually, through having a miscarriage and realizing how badly I wanted to be a mother, I realized that I had to change my relationship a little bit, invite the feminine in more fully, and separate myself from feminism for a while to be able to reconcile with her later. So that's kind of what the piece is about.
It's a really beautiful piece. I was really quite moved by your piece. And I know that I've seen you somewhere online. I saw something. I think you had coined a term, feminine-ism.
Yeah. So I said in the piece that, you know, my mom had stayed home and raised three children, and then was part of the second wave movement of feminism and went back and got her PhD when she was 50 and became a college professor. So when I was growing up, I always, you know, heard, you know, don't give up on your career. You know, the career is really important. You know, don't just stay home and raise children. You know, make sure you've got this other identity fully launched in the world. So I realized really late in life that I wanted to be a mother and decided that I hadn't fully developed my relationship with the feminine. And so, yeah, in the piece I talk about how I'd become a femininist, and then that extra syllable was the thing that was really transformative for me.
Did you have thoughts about being a mother early on and just think, oh, I'll wait until after my career success?
Yeah, you know, I did. And I think part of it was that I hadn't met the right guy yet.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
I just hadn't met the right guy. And, you know, I had a really exciting career writing for newspapers. And I had an advice column when I was 23. And then, you know, went on to
wow.
LA Times.
Wow, wait, you were giving advice when you were 23 years old?
I know. It's funny, right?
Yeah. Yes. Maybe, maybe not.
You know, it's the Star Tribune. They had just redone their what's the name? Like, I forgot the name. What this is called? Well, anyway, it's not important. So, but yeah, I hadn't met the right guy, and I guess I had. You know, in the media, we always see all these celebrities having children when they're, you know, 48, and you know, I think one of the celebrities had twins when she was in her 50s, and you just kind of start thinking that there's no limit to your own fertility. And, you know, feminism, you know, kind of underscores that because, you know, that was the underwriting philosophy that you can do anything and be anything. And, you know, there was no limit. And then what I ran up against was my own reproductive limits, my own biological limits.
Yeah.
And so that was really surprising to me and really shocking. I really had no idea that at 35, you know, a woman's fertility starts to kind of fall off a cliff.
And that's the experience that you've been having.
Right.
You've gotten pregnant.
Right.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, and that's what I talk about in the piece, that, you know, we got pregnant and then had a miscarriage at 6 weeks. And I, you know, that's when I really realized how important it was to me to experience motherhood and to have a child. So I fell in love when I was 36, got married when I was 36, and didn't really know that already I was past, you know, the 35-year mark when you actually become what they call advanced maternal age. And I didn't have any awareness of that. So
you're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till. And if you're just joining us this morning, my guest is Elaine Gale. And Elaine is a freelance writer and journalist. She had been a religion reporter for the LA Times and a columnist and reporter for the Star Tribune. And her work has shown up in many of the magazines that are familiar to you, I'm sure. Entertainment Weekly, Good Housekeeping, Cosmopolitan, and W. Elaine, I want to just backtrack a moment about you hadn't found the right guy until you were 36. So in your article that you wrote, I love how you described the different men in your life prior to your husband. Mr. Right Now, Mr. Adorable Slacker, Mr. Too Bland, Mr. Has Potential, Mr. Too Old for Me, and then Mr. Artistic but Unstable. I mean, I just think that is such a beautiful cross-section of experiences.
Yeah, it was funny. I got an email from one of my ex-boyfriends, and he said, "Now, which one am I?"
He couldn't self-identify, like, huh?
I was like, you were Mr. Right Now. Come on. You don't recognize yourself? So.
And then how did you meet Mr. Perfect, Mr. Right?
Well, I actually met him.
Mr. Exactly
in
Right is how
Tucson.
You say it. Yeah.
Yeah, I met him in Tucson. And he actually was putting up cable for a house in the alley across where I lived, and he dropped his ladder, and it woke me up. This was really early in the morning, so I went outside, and there was this, you know, adorable guy standing there, and he was very apologetic, and he had dropped his 30-foot ladder into the side of the house where I was living, and so I said, "Well, do you want to come in and have coffee?" And he said yes. And so we've been together for 9 years.
That is such a great story. Elaine, further on in your article you wrote, and you were just pointing to this a moment ago, after your miscarriage, you had this sense of not feeling special. Can you talk about that?
Not feeling special anymore. Yeah. Well, it was really interesting to me because, you know, after the miscarriage, that's something that I had said to my husband. You know, we were kind of holding each other and trying to support each other afterwards. And it really struck me because it was such a, you know, it was just very an unexpected thing to say. And I realized, you know, how deeply special the pregnancy was to me and, you know, how it felt more special to me than, you know, any job that I'd ever had. And that was really striking. Mm. So, and I felt like, you know, it was this thing where, you know, my whole life I'd been told, you know, you can do anything at any time, you know. And then I realized that that wasn't true. And that, you know, in becoming so committed to my identity and my professional identity, that I had kind of forgotten about, you know, my feminine identity. And, you know, so that was something that really hit me really hard. And I was really angry about it for a while. And the way I wrote the piece was that I anthropomorphized feminism and the feminine. And it came out of this idea that, you know, what would those two say to each other? You know, if they were sitting down at a coffee table together, what advice would the feminine give to, you know, feminism? What advice would feminism give to the feminine? And that's really how the piece started. I really started to think about that. You know, if my own life in my 20s and early 30s had been more balanced, you know, how would those two pieces have interacted together? You know, and I realized that I had just strayed so far from, you know, all kinds of things that, you know, were taught to me, you know, to kind of stay away from, like, don't get stuck in the kitchen, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, so then I could barely figure out how to, you know, saute kale. You know, I mean, I had spent so much time away from the kitchen. So it's really, you know, in even gardening and getting my hands in the dirt and, you know, just being aware of all the, like, the energy of the fertility of the earth and of life itself. I had strayed so far from that, you know, in this kind of corporate, more male-identified role that I had been in. And so it's really it's been transformative for me to get back in touch with that feminine energy. You know, like, I've learned how to make chicken stock, and I've learned how to cook, and, you know, my husband and I have been doing a lot of gardening, and all of that is so sustaining and so fulfilling in a way that I wish I had discovered earlier. Mm. So this breaking up with feminism piece, in a way, it's kind of my, you know, way of reconciling. And of course, I get back together with feminism in the end, because I know that my life wouldn't be what it is today without feminism. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, so I do reconcile feminism at the end, and I really see how both the feminine and feminism are such a contribution to women's lives, but that it's that balance that's so important.
So when you talk about the feminine, and then you were talking about cooking and gardening, when the feminine was sitting at the table, the metaphoric table with feminism, who is the feminine?
Well, I think it's, you know, the energy of nurturing and of compassion and of creativity. You know, that's kind of my conception. Mm. But there's lots of different ways, you know, to think about what the feminine is in your own life. And I think that's different for everyone.
Mm-hmm. It certainly seems like in our culture, the feminine, as you're describing it, is not really supported. Or it's hard to find support for that, do you think?
Well, I do. I definitely think that. And I, you know, it's interesting because, you know, talking about Betty Friedan, who's the author of The Feminine Mystique, who really kicked off second wave feminism, it's funny because, you know, she, in her writing, talked about, it's almost like having an identity theft. You know, we talk a lot about identity theft these days.
Yeah.
But Betty Friedan really was talking about that in her book. She was talking about how women's identities get stolen and, you know, completely focused around their home life and their caring for their children or their husband or, you know, their homes. But it's interesting because I think that that same identity theft can happen to women in their careers. that their essential, you know, kind of nurturing and creativity and that feminine life force can actually, you know, get co-opted by this corporate culture we live in, where you're supposed to go fast and you're supposed to, you know, be aggressive and, you know, you're supposed to be in competition with each other. And, you know, there's a way in which I think that there's a lot of people in my generation where in some ways, you know, our feminine identity was kind of stolen from us because we were so busy enacting, you know, this career side of ourselves.
Yeah. That's really such an interesting flip for me to consider. And when you, I'm interested to hear, how do you now create the balance for yourself between, you know, on this show, we talk about balance, alignment, and joy, amongst other things. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea of balance looking, you know, playing with the idea of balance between the feminine and the feminism. So you say at the end of your article, you reconcile with feminism. How do you strike the balance?
Well, I think for me, that's a great question. And I think that, you know, for me, I've been really trying to practice gratitude and acceptance. I think those are two really big things, like not to struggle against the path that my life is taking, you know, to, you know, be in some kind of acceptance about it. Mm-hmm. And just to realize that life is miraculous. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how my story ends. So if I sit in suffering and, you know, judgment of myself or, you know, my life, my choices, that's not going to create anything new. That's not going to open up new possibility. You know, but if I kind of sit in acceptance and gratitude, knowing that life can unfold in many different ways, then I think I create more joy and more love. And I think that's really important, especially, you know, women going through miscarriages and going through infertility, to really, you know, focusing on deepening your love, like for yourself, for life itself, and deepening your love and your connection with your partner. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, this infertility struggle and fertility, you know, challenges can drive a wedge between couples too. But if you can, you know, come back to that love and acceptance and, you know, try and see things from there and try and sit in that, that you're open to where your life goes. I mean, you know, we could end up adopting, let's say, a child from Taiwan, and, you know, we could end up, you know, living in Taiwan half the time and here half the time. Our whole lives could, you know, I could end up writing a book about that. That could be completely transformative for me. You know, I mean, you never know what life is going to bring. So I think that's really important. I think those practices are important. And then I've noticed a lot, too, you know, in my 20s, I ran marathons and, you know, was doing power yoga and stuff like that. And, you know, here at the end of my 30s, I'm finding myself doing yin yoga. You know, I find myself going for walks every day with my dog. You know, just kind of slowing down. Mm. There's a kind of softening and a kind of slowing down, you know, that's happening. Instead of, you know, slamming a huge cup of coffee every morning, I'm slowly drinking tea in the afternoon, you know.
Yeah, that's a beautiful so, image, yeah. When you talk about deepening your love for yourself, Elaine, how do you do that?
Well, I think, you know, I think that there's lots of different ways to, you know, engage in self-care. You know, I think there's lots of great practices, like, you know, keeping a gratitude journal is a great thing to do. And, you know, it really reminds me of what you said when you opened up our conversation, when you were talking about making an invitation to others to connect with people and to connect with a community. And I think that's really important, too. I think that sometimes, you know, women going through this can get isolated and you can feel like you're the only one, you know, who's going through something. So I think, you know, reaching out to people and being connected and, you know, support groups and, you know, counselors can be great to talk to. And little practices like, you know, taking a herb bath or, you know, going for a walk or, you know, just going outside and feeling the sun on your face. You know, getting off the concrete, you know, that's everywhere in our lives and actually putting your feet on the earth, you know, sticking your hands in the soil, like feeling that dirt and that life force. There's all kinds of, I think, little practices that you can, you know, incorporate in your life to try and be more awake in your own life.
I love that. I love the idea of just putting my feet on the earth and feeling the sun on my face and waking up to my life. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, yeah. And I think spring is such a great time, you know, to feel that energy from the earth and that fertility just, you know, coming forth everywhere.
Yeah. So, Elaine, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I would love to hear about your trip to Ecuador.
Okay.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And if you're just joining us this morning my guest is Elaine Gale, who is a freelance writer and journalist, and she has written articles in many of the publications that you will see in the grocery store. And she's also an assistant professor of communication studies and journalism at California State University in Sacramento. Elaine, you have a beautiful poem that you want to share with us. Can we do that now?
Sure. I thought I would share an excerpt from this poem called Awakening Now by Dana Fald.
Okay. And will you, I'm going to ask you to really take your time when you're reading it.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
And it's from her book, Go In and In, Poems from the Heart of Yoga. Forgive yourself. Now is the only time you have to be whole. Now is the sole moment that exists to live in the light of your true self. Perfection is not a prerequisite for anything but pain. Please, oh please, don't continue to believe in your disbelief. This is the day of your awakening.
Oh. Thank you. And how has that had meaning in your life?
You know, I love a few things about that. My friend Leslie gave that to me, that poem, and I hadn't heard of Dana Fald's before, and I loved the line about perfection.
Yeah.
I think there's so much pressure on women to be everything and do everything at the speed of light for everyone. And I think that that's a really beautiful idea. And also, you know, just forgiving yourself. And the line about, you know, now is the sole moment that exists to live in the light of your true self. I love that.
Mm.
So it's a really great reminder to be present and to be in the present moment.
Yeah, thank you so much. I am going to, with your permission, I'm going to go ahead and put that excerpt on my website so we can revisit it. It's really wonderful. Thank you. Elaine, you and I were talking a moment ago about when we're at this, when we have hardship in our lives, these are my words, not yours, but we come to this place that's a pivotal moment. And we can choose probably to walk many paths, but you were talking about two options that we would have during this difficult time. Can you share that with us?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was just, you know, thinking about my own experience too of being in grief, and how, you know, it felt to me that I could open. It was an invitation to open up, or it was a moment where I could choose to shut down. And I could really see that. I could see that fork in the road for me, kind of spiritually. Mm-hmm. And I could see those paths, you know. And I really wanted to keep prying my heart open. I think even though after, you know, kind of a disappointment and, you know, a loss, the loss of a child, you just, it's really difficult to do that. But I feel like it's just a really important practice to keep trying to be open. And that's part of why I wrote the article, too, is that I found that, you know, people aren't very open about talking about miscarriage.
Yeah.
And, it happens in 20% of all pregnancies, according to, you know, quite a few of the statistics. So it's a really common thing that happens, but it's kind of, it exists, you know, on the fringes of conversation. It's not really something that, there's not really an opening to talk about it with people. And I kind of wanted to create more of an opening for it by being open about it myself and to keep trying to take that path of openness and of love and connection. So that was really important to me. I could really feel that when I was going through the grieving process afterwards.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And if you're just joining us this morning, Elaine Gale is my guest, and she is the Assistant Professor of Communication Studies and Journalism at California State University in Sacramento. Gale, when you're talking about, I don't know, for some reason, your willingness to allow yourself to be so vulnerable with yourself in this way that you want to continue to open and soften your heart, and then with those of us around you, and that you're willing to engage in this conversation about one of the more difficult times in your life, it feels so different to me than that place of I got to make sure I'm picking the right word, feminism, which feels kind of invulnerable and impervious and moving forward. It just feels like such a contrast to me. And I feel so grateful to you for your willingness to share your open-heartedness, your wholeheartedness.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. So tell us about your trip to Ecuador. First of all, I am interested to know, why did you choose to go to Ecuador?
Well, you know, so I'm involved in an organization called the Pachamama Alliance. And the mission of that nonprofit is to have a human presence on the planet that's environmentally sustainable, socially just, and spiritually fulfilled. So it's a really interesting organization.
Yeah.
And they do trips to Ecuador, to the rainforest, to connect with an indigenous tribe called the Achuar. And I was really interested in the trip, but at the time, my friend was leading the trip. I was pregnant, you know, so I was just like, you know, I'm not going to be going to Ecuador. I'm barely, you know, I don't even want to go to Folsom, you know.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, and the Achuar are a dream culture, so they frequently share dreams, and they rely on their dreams to guide them in their daily lives. They actually have a dream-sharing circle every morning before the sun comes up, where the shaman of the village interprets dreams for everyone. So what they say is that the Achuar dream you in to visit them. And my friend Sandy, who led the trip, called me and said, "I dreamed you were on the trip."
Oh,
and
wow.
at that point, I said, you know, we hadn't told anyone that we were pregnant, but I did tell her, you know, and said, you know, so I won't be going, but that's so interesting. So then we had a miscarriage 2 weeks after that, and I got clearance from the doctor in time to go on the trip. So I indeed went.
Oh.
So, and it was a perfect trip to go on. You know, it's really restorative and amazing to be in the heart of the rainforest where, you know, the roads, you know, the rivers are the roads, and your the supermarket is the rainforest itself. And it was really incredible, you know, to be, you know, lying on a banana leaf, you know, by, you know, this Amazonian river and being part of some of these sacred rituals and ceremonies with the Achuar people. It was a really transformative trip where you really got to be quiet with yourself. You know, it's a place where there's, you know, no artificial light, no ambient light, no noise, you know. And that quietness is something that I try and return to, even in my daily life here in Sacramento, that I try and carry with me from the rainforest as a present, that deep kind of peace and connection with everything around you. And it was quite a solace to me in that time, where I really felt that interconnectedness, and it really did help me, you know, to feel love again. Mm. So yeah, it was a really wonderful trip.
So can you take us through? I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, can you take us through like one of the days on your trip? I'm grasping. I'm having a hard time imagining what this must have been like for you. What were some of the practices that you did with them?
I guess, you know, part of the gift of the trip was that we were in community. There were about, you know, 12 of us on the trip. And so that was also really sustaining. You know, you really got to see how everything's available in community, mm-hmm. if you let yourself be open to it. Mm. And, you know, I mean, somebody needed a sweater. Somebody had two sweaters. One person needed, you know, another set of rain boots. Somebody else brought two. I mean, it's just incredible. And it's not just the material things, but even the emotional and the spiritual things, you know, were bartered and traded and shared. And, you know, I got to really appreciate that community on that trip. And I don't know, I think it, you know, it also reminds me of that Chinese saying, if I hurry, I'll never arrive. Mm. And in the rainforest, there's nowhere to go. You know, there's no agenda. There's no day planner. There's no alarms on your iPhone going off.
Yeah.
And that sense of just being where you were and just listening to all the sounds of the rainforest and all the technicolor, the gorgeous flowers, the gigantic birds, the beautiful monkeys, you know, it was just such a feast, and it really located you, you know, squarely in the present moment. Mm. And it's so easy in our daily lives to just get knocked off of that awareness. So I think that was part of what was so powerful.
That's beautiful. And when you were saying, you know, really listening to the sounds of the rainforest, and I can only imagine it would be easier for me to listen to my tiny, quiet voice without all of the external distractions going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. And it was amazing, too, how, you know, we could communicate with the Achuar not knowing, you know, the language at all.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, yeah.
And earlier, you had talked about you've been doing gardening. You and your husband have been doing some gardening, and I'm wondering, was your trip to Ecuador, did that influence your desire to garden at all?
Well, it did. It really did. You know, we all got to meet with the shaman in the village, and that was one of the things that the shaman interpreted from some of the dreams that I had in the dream sharing ceremonies, was, you know, to work on my connection with the earth, and, you know, that gardening and, you know, cooking and nurturing myself and my husband would be really healing for me at the time. And it really was. Mm. You know, it was, we ended up last year, we had never planted seeds before. And so we did a bunch of different seed trays. And that experience of the discipline and monotony of watering and looking after those seed trays and watching some of the seeds, you know, flourish where others, you know, nothing happened at all. They didn't, you know, they didn't take off at all. And just having that sit as a metaphor, you know, for trying to create life.
Mm.
You know, sometimes the seeds are amazing and they just bust through and, you know, reach for the sun and grow like crazy. And sometimes they don't, and you don't know why, you know?
Mm.
So it was a really interesting and really rich experience of trying to grow, you know, our vegetables and flowers from seeds. So
are you doing that again this year?
Well, we haven't started yet. So in California, it's about 65 degrees today. So we're not quite there, but it'll probably be coming up soon. We did buy a bunch of bulbs.
Okay.
So, yeah.
What are you going to plant this year? Do you know?
We're going to plant a bunch of dahlias and, oh, I don't remember now, honestly. Uh-huh. We bought a ton of stuff.
Will you do vegetables?
We do, yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah,
great.
We just started growing vegetables too.
Uh-huh. Can you I'm sure you can, but it's hard for me to imagine. Can you grow a tomato from a seed? Did you try tomatoes?
A tomato plant? You
yeah.
can.
Did you do
can
that?
Grow a tomato plant. You know, we didn't try to grow tomato plants. You know, and it's funny what you learn, like the squash are just irrepressible.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, squash are just unbelievable. They're so easy to grow from a seed.
Uh-huh.
You know, we had great luck with lupin until the snails found them.
Mm.
But yeah, you know, the different seeds really did have different personalities, when they took off and when they didn't. I didn't try a tomato plant, but that would have been fun.
I would like you to try a tomato plant this year. Maybe I'll try a tomato plant. I love to garden too. And in fact, this year, one of my guests, Deborah Eden Tall, she's also from LA, and she is a sustainability coach. And as a result of talking with her on a few shows and then reading her book or reading her book and talking to her, I've decided I'm going to ask my son to join forces with me to create a composting system, which will be right at the end of a really large vegetable garden. So I'm kind of excited and a little intimidated by it.
Ooh, that sounds great.
Yeah, it's really great. Fun. It's really fun. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And this morning, my guest is Elaine Gale. And Elaine is sharing with us her story about, as she calls it, breaking up with feminism. I have to be careful not to say feminism. And I just love the idea of your reconciliation at the end with the feminine and feminism. And I'm wondering, where do you feel as though you're heading next? What's next for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that question. And, you know, the last line in the piece, in the article, was, you know, after I decided that I'm ready to be good friends with feminism again, the last line of the article is still, the feminine is more fun to be around. You know, and it's interesting that, actually coming back to that, I think it's funny that I ended with a sense of fun because, you know, instead of doing New Year's resolutions this year, I just picked a word.
Yeah.
And my word for 2011 is fun.
Oh, I love it.
So you know, I went to hear one of my favorite writers, Anne Lamott, speak here in Sacramento. And she was talking about, this is just such a beautiful line, she was talking about how laughter is carbonated spirit. And it really struck me. And I thought, you know, that's so true. And when we're in the midst of things that are so heavy, you know, like grief and loss, you can't forget that. You can't forget to connect back, you know, to fun and to laughter. And, you know, that may not happen right away.
Yeah, it's a journey.
But, you know, yeah. But I think that, you know, reconnecting with laughter and with just being silly and having fun and, you know, dancing and, you know, all those kinds of things will keep your spirit, you know, saturated with love.
Elaine Gale, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's really been delightful, and I really do appreciate how generous you've been in sharing your open-heartedness through, you know, I know it was a really difficult time, and I love that your next steps are into fun.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. And that's all the time we have for today, and I want to thank you for spending part of your weekend with me. I'd like to remind you to log on to jennifertill.com, where you can listen to past episodes of other shows. You could listen to this show again, and you could make any blog comments you'd like to there. Until next Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, I want to remind you to, I'm going to add another reminder here, reach out. Really reach out and connect with somebody this week in a meaningful way. And remember to ask yourself, what's the kindest thing I can do for me right now? See you next week.